Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 58 of the Business Handmade Podcast. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Kim.
And I'm sweating.
I can't tell if we're just goofballs or what. Like, we start laughing before we even record
anything. Well, right before I press record, I look at you with that face.
You do have a dopey face.
Here we go.
It also doesn't help that our air conditioner is broken, but, you know, we're waiting on the repair, we're waiting on a piece, and the show must go on. So yeah, we've moved to the cooler side of our house.
It's day two without an air conditioner. It'll be fixed tomorrow, but we're sitting in our dining room because it's a tad bit cooler, maybe like half a degree cooler.
And we're a tad bit more formal tonight, so we're in the formal dining room.
Yeah, we're sitting in the formal room. But yes, we had a great podcast with Brian of Bony Boards Workshop. And we talked a lot about how he started in skateboards and longboards, but then how he progressed his business over to wall art and more functional pieces. So he's really taken a really good look at like what his capabilities are and then stretching them even further.
Do you know that you're bouncing like a little squirrel right now?
Yeah.
Well, you're doing these little hops or something.
This chair is uncomfortable.
Well, that's funny. Yeah. So Brian really embodies the progression of a maker, not limiting themselves, just looking around for inspiration, but also really hearing what customers are looking for. You know, he's from the Jersey Shore area, and where he lives and where he's lived in the past, where he's grown up, has been heavily influenced by like skaters, the skater demographic,
yeah, yeah.
Right? People that use skateboards for, and you know, I feel like a total idiot that I didn't realize people actually do use them for like necessity, getting places.
Transportation.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I don't know where we grew up. We had a skate park and like, it was more of a kid thing, right? Like a teenager thing, a hobby thing. But, down where Brian's from, people rely on them a little bit more than like cars because it's more convenient in the summer. And, mm-hmm. you know, you think of like the shore towns and people don't want to lose their parking. So totally get it. Yeah, so anyway, he was, you know, that's where his business kind of started, with his own skating hobby and designing a board that matched his style because he couldn't find something that he really liked. And then it kind of progressed from there, because as he met people in person at shows, they expressed, you know, maybe interest in what he was doing but didn't have a need for a skateboard. So then it kind of progressed to wood slabs with the same style of art, and he's heavily inspired by tattoo art, mm-hmm. Particularly that geometric, multifaceted style of like animals and things like that. So we're looking at his site right now, and it's really cool, and he does very minimal work with color, so it's mostly focused on what the actual graphic is and not so much the color.
I was just going to say, everybody listening, you know, pause this podcast.
Check it out.
Go to his website and click on Pyography Artwork. And it's just so awesome to see the different ways in which he can either put this art on a skateboard or on a wall decor hanging. And how intricate it could be, how geometric it could be, how colorful it could be. It's all of those in one. And also, I just can look at these forever.
It doesn't have to be color though. It's still,
right.
It doesn't lose any element, if it's black and white.
It's very cool.
And what I find most impressive is that this is pyrography. And if you've ever accidentally set something on fire,
yeah.
You'll know that it's kind of unpredictable. Or, you know, we work with other pyrographers who, allow almost like that current to kind of take its own shape.
Yeah.
And so it's fire. I mean, it can do its own thing, and yet he's able to make it into something so intricate that I'd be terrified to try to do this as a commission for someone.
Yeah, wood burning is so cool.
I'd be afraid I'd mess it up. And, you know, it's just really cool that Brian does this. But he's also, you know, just as he's progressed as an artist and as a salesperson, he's heard his customers, what they're looking for, what they really like in one piece, but maybe transferring it over to another. And then he started doing woodworking because of, he said he was inspired by making gifts for people. And then it just kind of spiraled into, and I feel like that's a common theme, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think people don't realize their talent in that specific area until they start making gifts for people.
Yeah. They make something for somebody else, and then it kind of gets in their head to be like, oh, I could do this again because it was fun. for somebody else, right. or I can make a few of them and see what people think about them. And that's, you know, that's where the creative avenue really starts. Mm-hmm. With people that don't know they want to get into a handmade business, they kind of just fall in it because they start getting that, scratching that itch of like, ooh, I made something and somebody liked it.
Yeah, and it diversifies the product line. It allows you to see what people want and put your own personal artistic spin on something. And the really cool thing about woodworking is that even if you and another woodworker that you've met along the way make the same type of product, it's not going to be the same because you'll have your own artistic yep. representation in that. And Brian was talking about how he's sort of a perfectionist with things like the American flag. It has to be the appropriate scale for him. Otherwise, it just doesn't sit right, you yeah. know? Or when he's doing pyrography, if something doesn't look like a straight line and it's supposed to be a straight line for him, how that doesn't sit with him. Where maybe somebody else doesn't have that same... I don't even know what the word is that I'm looking for, but like that same criteria, I guess, or yeah, maybe perfectionism, where maybe for someone else it's different. So there's always going mm-hmm. to be that personal spin on it too.
Yeah. So let's talk about what's coming up, because I am ready for this little hiatus to be over. We took, you know, a month and a half off, and we're very eager to be back doing shows again.
We are eager to be doing shows. I'm also eager to birth this child because I'm, you know, it's hot. It's hot not only because our air conditioner is not working, but because I have a baby.
You have a baby strapped to you at all times.
At all times. There's no putting him down. So
we have two events that are coming up before the baby is born.
Yes.
One at Jersey Girl Brewing. That's a crafts and drafts that is very exciting. We always have a great time there. We always have a good crowd that comes out. So that's August 7th. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have Summerfest at Ort Farms, which is August 28th and 29th.
Yeah. And I just went out to Ort Farms the other day.
Yeah, you can talk about that.
To meet with the owners and Zigmeister Brewing to talk about what that event is going to be like. And, you know, we've personally been to Ort Farms for the Father's Day for the Strawberry Festival, mm-hmm. where they had Jersey Girl pouring a strawberry. Was it strawberry lager, I think?
Yep,
I don't
remember. Brand new.
For that specific occasion, and the place was packed, and the feedback we get from all of our vendors is that Ort Farms is always packed.
Well, it's Long Valley, so it's right next to Chester, and yeah. that's a very good community
it's
to
a
be
good,
in.
Yeah, it's a good demographic and people who really appreciate art and handmade and farms, so it's kind of cool that we get to be a part of that. And so we've experienced it from that avenue, and we get to do the show this time, which is exciting. It's going to be a celebration of summer, the close of summer. It's tied with their Sunflower Festival, which already has its own demographic of people that come out to it. It's family friendly. You can pay admission and do the hayride over to the Sunflower maze.
Maze or trail, they're calling
yeah,
it.
Yeah, trail. You can pick your own sunflowers, and they have a whole, like, the farm is massive. And there's a farm stand, of course, so you can get some, like, the produce and stuff that are special to Ort Farms. And then right across from that property is where they have, like, play structures for the kids. There's, like, a train, mm-hmm. and I want to say a wagon and maybe an ark that are all, like, wooden structures for the kids to play on. They have a petting zoo. They normally have apple cannons on the day that we're there. I don't think the apple cannons will be open, but they have horse and carriage rides.
Pony rides.
The cow train.
And then we'll have live music.
Yeah. Hey, are we on the same page? Craft beer from Zigmeister.
Food trucks.
And, of course, our makers. So it's going to be really exciting. I guess it's fitting that our AC is not working because it'll probably be kind of hot end of August.
I don't know. Because our May event was a scorcher, so I'm thinking maybe it'll be a little cooler for our August
yeah
month.
Right, maybe we'll get lucky.
Maybe,
you know,
they'll
that
swap.
First, that weekend of wine and jazz, the
oh
first weekend in June was really hot, so yeah, we'll see. I guess the weather's kind of up in the air, but it's a beautiful venue. They are friends with the owners of Tranquility Farms, so we're excited that we just get to, like, touch all of the farm community and get to branch out to new venues and meet new people. So that's exciting.
Yeah, we love the connections that we make. Because, you know, we'll meet somebody and they'll pass our information along and we'll meet another great somebody. Yeah.
And it's always helpful when they value social media and have that active presence on social media, because I think, you know, with everything, it's all collaboration. You know, we all want to see the event be a success. So mm-hmm. it's exciting that Ort Farms is very involved in all of that, in planning events and in advertising their events and just building it to be something bigger and better, much like Tranquility does and a lot of the other venues we work with. So
yeah, send us an email.
We're super excited about it.
If you're interested in attending or vending, because there are a couple of spaces left.
Yeah.
And we'll send you all the information for it.
There are discounted tickets available now for adults and children. And then at the door, the price will go up by like $2. So not super significant, but if you want to score a discount, which who doesn't love a discount, you can buy your tickets now.
Yeah, email us at hello@marketspacevendorevents.com.
Yep, and we will hook you up with that link. So we look forward to seeing everyone really soon. It's been nice to be off a little bit and be with our kids, but we'll be back soon. And yeah. We hope you enjoyed this episode of our podcast with Brian of Boney Boards Woodshop.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing great.
Good. We're happy to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Second time's a charm. I hope this recording works for us.
Yeah.
So introduce yourself to the people listening and tell us a little bit about your small business.
Hi, everyone. I am Brian Boney. I'm the creator of Boney Boards Wood Shop. Was originally Boney Boards, but I've started to get into woodworking more. I do custom skateboards, custom wood burning wall art, and I do custom woodworking.
So are the skateboards and the longboards what you started with?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. I started with the skateboards. Started with the skateboards and longboards first, and then not everybody wants a skateboard. That was
right.
When I did my first show, that was a lot of the things where it was a lot of, especially the older people, it was like, oh, yeah, I used to skateboard back in the day.
Back in my day.
Not so much now. But yeah, that's what I started out with. And then leading with that kind of feedback, it kind of led me into doing the art where you could just hang it on the wall, because not everybody needs a skateboard. I mean, I do have a few people that have hung them on the walls. But it just makes it easier with the, just like the slab of wood to be hung up on the wall, because it takes up less space and it's not as heavy of a piece.
Yeah, it sounds like it's also diversified your customer base too. So, you know, maybe you're able to bring new and different people into your booth versus just having the skateboards.
Yeah, I try to make it so that there's a little bit. And I try and price everything kind of relatively at different price points so that it can hit every single budget and
have
something for everybody kind of thing.
And it's really cool because I looked at your website and you have all sorts of shapes and sizes of longboards and skateboards. Did you have a history in skating before?
Yeah, I skated real little bit when I was younger. Parents got me a cheap skateboard when I was probably like 10. And then where I lived didn't really match up with anything. and then I moved up here and then moved to Belmar. And basically around 2014, I decided, okay, I'm tired of losing my parking spot in the summertime. So I got to figure out a way to get around. That way I can run to the store and get food for lunch or dinner, or run down to the beach and not have to lose my parking spot. Right?
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. That's like, yeah, you were meeting a need, but it turned into a craft. I kind of love that.
Yeah.
And did you have more skating experience at that time or more woodworking experience?
It was definitely more skating experience at that time. I started out with just a standard board that I got from, I think, Zumiez, actually.
Mm.
Just kind of your stereotypical pull it off the wall and throw some trucks on it and throw some wheels on it and then just go and skate. And then the next one I looked at, I thought, there's nothing that really is out there that I want for my next board.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to do some sort of, this was before I got into wood burning, actually. I wanted some of the artwork from the graffiti artist Banksy. I'm a huge fan of his. So I wanted some artwork that he had done on one of my boards and ended up figuring out a way to kind of laminate like a piece of paper onto it so that it kind of washes out after it's kind of wetted out with the like clear coat. So that,
cool.
And it just kind of progressed from there and then ended up starting, thought, I could try wood burning. I think that would look really nice on the board. And then that did that board. And then that's progressed into doing, now that I strictly only do wood burning on skateboards.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I know we were talking before, your pyrography artwork on the boards and on the decor that you can hang. That's influenced by certain tattoo styles, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I've always been interested in, tattoos ever since I can remember. I've always liked tattoo art, from, traditional Japanese to, American traditional. I've really started to, after seeing a lot of like the tattoo shows that were on TV, they started to do a lot more geometric stuff.
Yeah.
And that's, I really liked how that looked, just kind of a mixing of different shapes to create this animal or landscape scene that kind of pops out of nowhere, just with a bunch of shapes put together.
It's kind of a really clean look, but also abstract. Mm-hmm. So there's really that art element to it, but it's also it's not taking away from the board. It's not taking away from the art itself. Like, you can really focus on what it is that you made. I think that's super cool.
Yeah. And I tried some of the pieces. I tried to put a little bit of color in. Like there's one piece that I've done that is an owl, and I really wanted to like accentuate the eyes. So I like added color to the eyes. That way it really pops out.
Yeah.
The dark background with the wood burning.
Have you ever gotten custom requests? Like, somebody sees your work and they're like, oh, I want you to do a bear or something, that they have something specific in mind and you have to come up with an idea of how to do it?
Yeah, I've had, a lot of the skateboards that I do are custom, where I usually have two or three with me at any of the events that I do. And then usually the customer will contact me and say, hey, I saw you at such and such show. Do you do custom work as well? And that's usually where I do most of my custom work, is on the skateboards.
Mm-hmm.
I've done anywhere from the Great Wave off of Mount Fuji.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that on a board. I've done a Welsh dragon. I've done geometric sharks. A little bit of.
That's amazing. It sounds like it's really conversational and gets people thinking about the possibilities of what they could put on a board, you know, and like you were saying, you couldn't find a board that really had what you wanted on it. So the gears probably start turning for a lot of people that are, you know, skateboard enthusiasts, or, you know, they know someone and they want to gift a board to them. Just really thinking about what they could possibly ask you to create.
Yeah. I really try to, not limit what I can do. I will tell people, okay, these are the few things that I cannot do. I haven't been able to get into that area. And mainly it's portraits, because
yeah,
I don't want to do a portrait, mainly for the fact that it's generally it's going to be of somebody that they really connect with, whether it be like a famous person, or it's going to be somebody that they that's like a loved one.
Right.
And I really don't want to mess that up.
That's so much pressure.
And we hear that a lot. You know, we have a dear friend and vendor who is a watercolor artist, and he says something similar to that. You know, he actually recreated one of our wedding photos in watercolor, and he's like, but I don't do faces, because faces to me are just like, you know, people could get easily offended if they don't think it represents them.
Yeah.
You know, it's artistic representation and different vision. And so he does these faceless watercolors, which are actually really cool. We're sitting right by it, so I'm like looking over at it, but I hear you on that. Like, I think that's echoed kind of across the maker community, that people really, they either love doing portraiture work, or they hate it and they don't do it, just because it really is so personal and so specific.
Yeah. I've talked to a few, other pyrographers, I guess that would be the term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've talked to a few others, and some of them do portraits, and that's one of their things that they do. And to me, I have a book that will kind of show you how, and mm-hmm. the tricks and techniques of how to. I just haven't sat down for a long enough time to really like, okay, I'm going to do this. I have a piece that's started, and I've started to trace it, of Bob Marley, because I figure if I can do him
mm-hmm.
with all the different layers of like texture with his hair and guitar and everything else, I should be able to at least do a portrait somewhat similar to the person, as similar as it would be passable.
Yeah.
I just haven't actually sat down and taken the time to be like, okay, let's get this done. Because I know
it's... But we're also not talking about the precision of like a pencil, you know? I mean, do you think that the wood burner, do you think that that allows you to have that same kind of precision or...
Control.
Is there... Yeah, and control over it? Or is there kind of that element of surprise where, you know, when you're done, it could maybe not look like what you originally set out to make it look like?
Yeah, there's probably at least 20 plus different types of wood burners with different brands and everything like mm-hmm. that, because you can have anywhere from the craft ones that you can buy at Michael's or whatnot. Or you can have ones where you can really dial in the temperatures of like how hot it will get, or you can change out the pens, like where it's just it's literally almost like a pen or a pencil, just like slightly a little, just fractions of a bit bigger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you do have, depending on the type of pen that I use, you can have a little bit more control, but it also depends on, since it's on wood, a lot of times you will hit that grain and it'll just kind of almost like a lightning bolt kind of just dig in a little bit and
yeah.
go. So then you kind of have to rework how you're going to either hide it or make it part of the piece.
Mm-hmm.
I usually try and hide it, just because it's a lot easier to hide it than it is to try and incorporate it into somewhere.
Yeah. What do you think has been your favorite custom piece, or maybe like the most challenging one, or the one that you felt most satisfied by, or whether that's style of art or commission, or, you know, anything that you've been creating so far?
There was one that I did probably like 3 years ago now, that it was an owl, and it was kind of like a Celtic knot type of look in the body. And it had a lot of small little details. That one was on a skateboard. And it took probably about 6 hours to draw it out and then burn it on there. And I did it all in one session because when I usually set out to do something, I want to get it done and then move on.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to stop in the middle, pick it back up later on. Cause if I get in like a zone, then I just can go.
Yeah, sometimes there's not that stopping point too when you're in the middle of a piece and you're like, oh, where's the best place to stop for a break? You kind of just want to, you see the whole picture there.
Yeah, because usually what I will have is I'll usually draw it out or whatever, print that out, and then, or like just have it kind of like blown up so that I can see like everything. And mm-hmm. I trace that onto the board because I have tried to do straight lines, like just freehand. And it's a lot harder to do because it ends up slightly at an angle, or it comes in like a little, not quite on line with where you want it to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I always make sure that I trace it on, because then I know, okay, I'm just following this line with a wood burner instead of, okay, let me draw this on. And because I have tried to do the freehand wood burner.
Yeah.
And
I think a lot of makers have that kind of perfectionism in them too. And, you know, especially when it's so easy to be so hard on yourself if something is not turning out exactly how you envisioned it in your head. So I think it is hard to do, you know, a straight line, or if something, maybe someone else might not notice it being slightly off, but to you as the maker, somebody who really wants that to look a certain way, it's, and especially with pyrography, it's like no going back, right? So
yeah.
you kind of feel like you have to get it right the first time.
I'm getting such a picture in my head because everybody kind of knows the relative size of a skateboard. So I'm listening to you and your method, and you know, I'm picturing it on, you know, a decent sized skateboard. That's a pretty big piece that you're working on.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that the people listening can get it into their head too about, you know, what that setup kind of looks like.
It generally it's around a, I guess, 17, 18 inch piece, because it kind of fits perfectly right in between the trucks
mm-hmm.
in the bottom. So that's where I found kind of the sweet spot, where you're not going to have the piece covered up with the trucks or anything. And they're not going to, like, the wheels aren't going to overhang depending on the type of trucks.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to keep it in that range of how big I want to go.
Yeah, it makes sense. And you mentioned you moved to Belmar. I think you moved to Neptune after that.
Yeah.
Do you feel that your business was influenced at all by being down in the Jersey Shore?
I would say maybe more so the skateboards, just because uh-huh. it is what a lot of people, and you can drive down like any one of the beach towns, and you're more often than not going to see at least one person skating, whether they're going to the beach or coming back or whatnot. It's just one of those things that it makes it so much easier to get around in those busy streets, especially for the kids. Or I noticed a lot of lifeguards have skateboards, mainly because they're living in the town, and one, they don't want to have to drive down to the beach, also losing their parking spot when their shift is done at the end of the day. Plus, they don't, if people are already down there, they don't want to have to be fighting for a parking spot. Or, I mean, now most places you're having to pay for a parking spot.
Yeah. So I don't even think I thought of it in that way. Like, I've always, you know, of course, you always see people on skateboards when you go down to the beach. And I just never really thought of it as like a necessity in that way. I kind of just thought of it as more of a hobby. But it's so interesting to think of it that way. And it really does kind of bring up the demand for what you do. You know, there are people who have interest in it, and there's a bigger market in that area.
Yeah, I mean, there are, I mean, then there's the whole aspect of the electric skateboards that have become a real craze. Mm-hmm. I actually made one for myself a couple of years ago, and that kind of stepped up the kind of a need for a board, mainly because of it being looked at as a mode of transportation instead of a toy. Mm-hmm. Because now that 20-minute ride that you would be going to work, where you're just pushing the board the entire way and you're coming to work and basically soaked with sweat out of breath.
Yeah, right?
Now you can do that. You leave a little bit early, you hop on your board, and you can get around traffic real quick, and you're not having to worry about getting stuck in traffic because you're able to kind of maneuver around it. And as long as your board has that amount of range, you can make it work.
Yeah, that's a good point, because instead of, you know, just focused on like, oh, hobby skateboarding or hobby longboarding, it really is a function of like, oh, I need to get to point A to point B and I don't want to drive.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other market of people that maybe aren't skateboarders, but, you know, they are environmentally conscious, or, you know, they want to save some time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's cool, because you can, I don't know if you're getting into selling anything that's electric other than just making the one for yourself, but there is that logical next step you could take.
Yeah, I don't really want to do the electric boards, mainly for the fact that the parts itself are so expensive.
Yeah.
Like on a small, small time basis. Because I'm a very big perfectionist with everything. And when I made my board, there was a lot of trials and tribulation type of thing, where sometimes like stuff would work and I'd be just kind of going and have like a flow going with building it, and then you'd hit like a roadblock and having to figure out why and kind of troubleshoot the whole software.
There could be
some expensive mistakes if the pieces cost a lot. And you know, we've talked a lot about the skateboards, and it sounds like the basis for your business and a lot of the business identity in the past kind of lived there, but you've been branching out to do more functional art. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So a lot of from skateboarding, since not everybody needed a skateboard, I moved into just the wall art, and that's become kind of a real staple, because I always have that type of stuff at shows, and it's basically the same artwork that you would see on the skateboard, just on a slab of wood that you can hang on the wall. And then I've also from there I've also moved into woodworking, just currently doing the cutting boards. I've started doing some boxes, stuff like that, but trying to make them a little bit more intricate than just clamping up a couple of pieces of different colored wood. I have done a checkerboard style. I've done a couple of American flag styles that look like an American flag. And the way that I do them, I've tried to make it as proportionately correct as it possibly can be.
Oh, that's cool. I like that because that bothers me too.
Yeah, because it really, it sticks out like a sore thumb when you see somebody that's just got this small square up in that would be like the union area with the stars. You see this small square, but then the rest are the stripes. And it's like, no, that it wouldn't be like that. It's
that's not right.
You have a whole, the proportions are off and it's really distracting me.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you talk about doing something like a cutting board or, you know, something that's so involved with like really rich, beautiful woods that you are clamping together. And I'm looking at the pictures right now. I'm guessing that you don't even paint them. It looks like you probably just seal them and those are just the natural colors. Would it be like sacrilege if you did pyrography on those? Is that something that you've ever considered doing?
I have done it a little bit. Usually if, because I have done them for gifts for weddings or bridal showers. Usually it's around, it's like the wedding theme is kind of that to give the cutting board. I've had a couple of people ask me to make one as a gift, and I'll just do a, usually either the last name mm-hmm. or like the initial of the last name or initials of the two people and then the wedding date.
So something small, so it doesn't take away from the beauty of the wood, the natural beauty of the wood.
Yeah, it's there so that it can be there, so that it has like a special meaning for the couple, but it's not taking away anything from the wood.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I love that. It's like a mix between all of the things you've learned along the way.
Yeah, and the wood that I use, mainly for, because cutting boards, you're technically not supposed to stain anything because depending on what it's actually based with, it can be not, or it can't be food safe.
Right.
I know there's some people that don't really care, but I like to just stick with what I can find that is the natural colors because mm-hmm. it is, to me, it's not right to do something that isn't food safe.
Yeah, that's the way to
do it. And I think you can just do like, food safe waxes and things like that to kind of seal it. I think that's awesome. So at what point did you kind of have that pivot where you went from really just doing the pyrography on the boards or on the wood slabs to saying, hey, I want to try this other style of woodworking. Was that something that you always knew how to do? Did somebody teach you, or you just kind of picked it up? And were you also meeting a need for that, or was that just kind of, hey, let me see what I can do?
I just kind of, it kind of just morphed into that. I got a couple of my tools in, let's see, 2019. Got my table saw and a planer in 2019. And the first thing that I made was a cribbage board for my sister-in-law because she likes cribbage. So I always try to make gifts mm-hmm. Just because it's a little bit more personal.
Yeah, personable. I love that.
And then it's just kind of taken off from there. And since I've moved to Neptune, I've been able to actually have like a small shop in my basement and collect a lot of lumber to use for the different woodworking pieces. It was a lot easier once I moved because I was in a small beach apartment, so you really can't be working with those type of things in an apartment.
Can't be like outside at all hours in the night.
Because they're very loud.
So yeah.
Luckily, I was able to have them at my employer, and then I would just go in there on the weekends or after hours. That way I could get this stuff done. I wasn't bothering anybody else in the complex. And
Yeah.
I was already, a lot of times I was already there, so for work, so once I was done work, then I just moved down.
It almost held you accountable. And I kind of love that, yeah, that your regular employer was supportive in that way, that was like, yeah, sure, go ahead, use this space.
Yeah, I made sure that I asked him beforehand, and he was like, "Yeah, that's fine. Just as long as it's not interfering with work." And I was like, "No, never."
So with the new workshop that you have now at your place, you could do some bigger items. What's in store? What are you thinking about doing next?
I took a furniture making class at a woodworking school that's in Tinton Falls. And we made a small kind of side table. But that's kind of where I want to start to venture, at least for around my house and maybe people that I know, until it kind of gets out there that I can do it.
I think that's so cool, and there's so much potential with furniture making because you can put so much of your personality into that, or you can allow past influences like vintage styles and things come into play, and
Yeah.
it's, possibilities are endless with that. I kind of love that. And no matter what wood products you make, whether you it's the boards or the wood slabs or cutting boards or furniture, you can always put your own personal artistic spin on that. It's never going to be the same as what someone else is doing. That's why I really love that we get to work with woodworkers, because it's so interesting to see how they differ from one another and what their favorite part is, or maybe they have like a favorite wood that they like to work with, or just, they get really excited about specific custom orders and things like that.
Yeah, it is, sometimes it's a challenge. A lot of times it's figuring out how to take an idea and actually see it like in your head and then actually just do it. I have started to get into some hand tool woodworking. I've kind of mainly keep that for when I'm making a gift for somebody. That way it's a lot more personable instead of doing a cutting board, because that I've seen it done. I know a couple of people that do it, but I would not want to have to cut the amount of small little intricate pieces or make sure that it's a straight line in order for it to all match up together without
Yeah, I can't imagine that either.
any little gaps. I would not want to have that little, that's good enough.
Right. And especially when it's something that you're using in the kitchen and for food, it kind of does need to be a little bit uniform. Otherwise, you'll probably get like crumbs and stuff stuck in the middle, and might make it a little difficult to clean. So, what do you think, with all the experience that you've gained in the different woodworking areas, what have you learned, or what is a really good tip that you've picked up along the way that you would pass along to other makers?
One of the things that I've really come to kind of embrace and just kind of do it is I try not to limit myself. So you should never try to limit yourself. If there's something that you think you can do, then you should at least try it before you say, "Oh, no, I can't do that." Because, I mean, by limiting yourself, especially as a maker, you're just limiting the amount of customers that you could possibly have, and you're limiting your customer base, and thus in turn that limits the amount of people that are going to see your item. And you should never stop learning about the craft that you do. Like, I always try to learn something new from, whether it be a YouTube video, maybe I've never watched this woodworker, or maybe I've never heard of this type of chair or seen this style of cutting board, because I know there's so many different types of cutting boards, and you can have the 3D looking cutting boards, which I do want to try that, but I know it is, it's very it's got to be spot on.
Yeah, it's probably pretty labor intensive and a bit involved, but
he's not going to limit himself.
No. And you can eventually have iterations. I think that's okay. You know,
yeah,
you can have your twist on something. You can have, it doesn't have to be perfect. And I think no matter what, it's, you know, like you're saying, it is so important to learn something. So even if you try it and it's not great the first time, you're still learning what you could do differently to make it better.
The advice is perfect, because as we were talking to you, you've been showing us in real time the ways that you didn't limit yourself and the ways that you tried to learn new things with your craft.
And it was like a progression.
Yeah. So that is spot on, because you proved what you're teaching.
You practice what you preach, yeah. Brian.
I try. I know there's a couple more tools that I know that I want to get that are on my radar. It's just finding the time and just saving up the money to actually get them.
Yeah.
I know that I want to do it.
Mainly, it's a process.
Yeah. One of them is a lathe, so I really want to get into wood turning, because that just seems so cool. Because, I mean, you can literally do just about anything on them.
Yeah. We've seen live demonstrations of that too with some of our makers where, you know, first of all, like, kudos to them that they were able to bring the thing with them, because that's not easy. And, you know, it's an expensive piece. You want to make sure it doesn't break.
Yeah.
So that's quite involved in itself, but it's also pretty awesome to watch the demonstration and just see what people can do. Like, I'm always awe inspired by people and their talent. And, you know, I wish that I had a little more artistic talent, but it's awesome that I get to work with the people who do. And I feel like personally proud of, you know, people like you who just try different things and really kind of let your personality kind of come out in what you're making, and then try something new and then have that be successful. And like, every little success builds on the last one.
Yeah. It's when you finally have that one piece that you've seen it in your head and then you're actually seeing it in real life and you can hold it, it's definitely a proud moment, because it's like, yes, I was able to do this. This looks really good. Even as a perfectionist, I know I can see the mistakes. So usually the first thing that I will do is take it to my wife, so I can just be like, here, and then see her reaction to it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. An outside perspective.
That way I know where the mistakes are, because I made it. I know when I made it. But she doesn't know. Sometimes she will pick them out, or she'll say, oh, you should add this. And it's like, oh, yeah, I should definitely add in a little bit more shading to it. And then do that, and it's like completely different piece.
So now that we're kind of wrapping up our conversation, where can people find you online, both social media and to purchase a piece?
My website, it hasn't been set up really for the e-commerce, but they can reach me at, I want to say on Facebook, it's just Bony Boards. But on Instagram, it is Bony Boards Woodshop. They can find me and just message me any sort of ideas, whether it be just cutting board or skateboard or wood art.
That's great. And we'll link it. We'll link all of your social media and website in our show notes too, so people can hop down there and click on it.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you so much for talking to us.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Take care, Brian.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to the Business Handmade podcast. Please make sure to subscribe and leave us a review. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at MarketSpace Vendor Events, or on our website, MarketSpaceVendorEvents.com.